Vishnu Prasthaya, Bhutalaya, Srimati, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Nitya, Namaste, Namaste, Saraswati, Deve, Gurvani, Chani, Nivasai, Sassini, Namaste, Paswati, Sadhani, Vandeham, Sri Guru, Sri Yuta, Padakamalam, Sri Gurum, Vaishnavam, Cha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sankana, Yaganatham, Vitam, Sam, Sajivam, Sadvaitam, Sadvaditam, Harijana, Sahita, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Deva, Sri Radha, Krishna Padam, Sahagana, Lalita, Sri Vishakam, Vitam, Cha. Thank you.
August 25th, 2007 in Leicester, Sunday feast.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Well, I had planned to talk about how we can realize Krishna in water. But also, it may be nice to talk about Julie Natra. I just gave a class on Julie Natra in the manor just a couple of days ago. So maybe we can talk about Julie Natra also. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about talking about water because there's one devotee in the manor, Kalangana. Maybe some of you met Kalangana, elderly lady. She makes these really fancy sweets. Who's been trying for a year to get me to go swimming on Thursday morning? I'm finally doing all these things now that I'm leaving London that people have been asking me to do. So we went to the sports club and we were swimming. And I started really thinking about how water is one of Krishna's energies. I thought about this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which I'm sure you know. This is from the 7th chapter. This is text 4 on page 369. A fairly famous verse. Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Kamano Buddhirevacha.
Kamano Buddhirevacha.
Ankara iti yame.
Ankara iti yame.
Nina Prakriti Rashtada.
Nina Prakriti Rashtada.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Kamano Buddhirevacha.
Kamano Buddhirevacha.
Ankara iti yame.
Ankara iti yame.
Nina Prakriti Rashtada.
Nina Prakriti Rashtada.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Kammano Buddhirevacha.
Kammano Buddhirevacha.
Ahankara iti yamme.
Ahankara iti yamme.
Nina Prakriti Rashtadha.
Nina Prakriti Rashtadha.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Bhumira Panalo Vayu.
Kammano Buddhirevacha.
Kammano Buddhirevacha.
Itiyame.
Ankara itiyame.
Inna prakriti astada.
Inna prakriti astada.
Bhumini.
Bhumini.
Earth.
Earth.
Appaha.
Appaha.
Water.
Water.
Anala.
Anala.
Fire.
Fire.
Vayuhu.
Vayu.
Air.
Air.
Kam.
Come.
Ether.
Ether.
Manaha.
Manaha.
Mind.
Mind.
Buddhi.
Buddhi.
Intelligence.
Intelligence.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Ahankara.
Ahankara.
False ego.
False ego.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Iyam.
Yeah.
All these,
all these.
May,
may,
my, dina,
dina,
separated,
separated.
Prakriti,
prakriti,
energies,
energies.
Astada,
astada,
eightfold.
Eightfold.
By the way, children are welcome unless they're, you know, like screaming, but just normal, unless it really bothers everybody else. Normal child voices. So translation, I'm going to read just one paragraph of the purport. Translation: Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. All together, these eight constitute my separated material energies. I'm going to read the second paragraph.
This material world is a temporary manifestation of one of the energies of the Lord. All the activities of the material world are directed by these three Vishnu expansions of Lord Krishna. These Purushas are called incarnations. Generally, one who does not know the science of God, Krishna, assumes that this material world is for the enjoyment of the living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and enjoyers of the material energy. According to Bhagavad Gita, this atheistic conclusion is false. In the verse under discussion, it is stated that Krishna is the original cause of the material manifestation. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this. The ingredients of the material manifestation are separated energies of the Lord. Even the Brahma Jyoti, which is the ultimate goal of the impersonalist, is a spiritual energy manifested in the spiritual sky. There are no spiritual diversities in the Brahma Jyoti as there are in the Vaikuntha Lokas, and the impersonalist accepts this Brahma Jyoti as the ultimate eternal goal. The Paramatma manifestation is also a temporary, all-pervasive aspect of the Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. The Paramatma manifestation is not eternal in the spiritual world. Therefore, the factual absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He is a complete energetic person, and he possesses different, separated, and internal energies. So Krishna talks about water twice in the Bhagavad Gita. Once here, where he says it's one of his energies, and of course another place where he says what about water? What?
I'm the taste.
I'm the taste, right? So Krishna tells us that water is as his energy, and that he is the essence or the taste of water. Now Prabhupada will often say that Krishna and his energies are non-different. Krishna is everything, he says, but everything is not Krishna. That is our Chintabhedabheda Tattva philosophy. So I was thinking about how Krishna is water. First of all, we can think about how he's the taste of water. So we should have a cup of water here for everybody to experience, not just me. But you can imagine, vicariously, imagine that you're also drinking water. You know, if you're very thirsty and you drink water, you feel very refreshed. And that taste of water, that refreshing aspect, in one sense, Prabhupada says the liquidity of water, that's Krishna. But as I was swimming in the water, I was also thinking about the fact that water is very soft. One of Krishna's qualities is that he's very, very soft. In fact, he's so soft that if he just brushes against something, he just brushes even against the leaf, his skin changes color. You know me, if I press really hard, maybe it changes color for a minute. But he's very delicate, and this softness of Krishna is an udipana, it's an impetus for the love of the devotees. What devotees often meditate on how soft Krishna's lotus feet are? The gopis, right? What kind of things do they say?
They say that they're going to be hurt by walking on the hard stones in Vrindavan when he's out in the pasture.
Yeah, they say even the little husks of grain that are there. Now, of course, Krishna is assuring his mother, don't worry, the ground of Vrindavan is very soft. Chintamani Prakrasad Mashud, the ground of Vrindavan is made of conscious gems. Prabhupada says the gold in the spiritual world has a nice fragrance, and the gems can also be very soft and pleasing. It's not that there's hard ground in Vrindavan. Mother Yasoda is also worrying about the softness of Krishna's speech, so therefore she asks Krishna to
wear shoes.
Wear shoes. And he says,
no.
Mother can buy shoes for the cows.
All the cows, yes. He says, I'm serving the cows, and unless you have shoes for all the cows. So this is a good example for us if we are in some position of leadership that we should not take facility that is not available to everyone. And Krishna says, unless you can provide an umbrella and shoes for all of my cows, then I will not take it. But the devotees are very concerned that Krishna's feet may be hurt, and even though there's nothing there to hurt Krishna's feet. Or this also when Krishna came to Mathura and he was going to wrestle with the Chinnara Mustika. And people became very upset. What a soft, delicate youth. And this is not fair. So Krishna is very, very soft. And one can feel in water this softness of Krishna. We're thinking about, like, here you're worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very interesting. It's Krishna in a very interesting mood, because among Krishna's qualities is also the quality of compassion. And each of Krishna's qualities are the same as himself, and they also have their personified form. So the personified form of the Lord's compassion is? Well, yes. But why? Because the personified form of the Lord's compassion is? Yes, Radharani. And therefore, when Krishna takes on the mood of Radharani, it's interesting that Krishna takes on the mood of Radharani to find out what it's like to love himself. But when he does that, because Radharani is the personification of his compassion, he's naturally full of compassion. And Radharani wants to bring everybody to Krishna because she knows that that's what will make Krishna happy. There's one thing that Krishna doesn't have, and that is she doesn't have the love of all the rebellious jivas like me. And so Radharani knows that Krishna will be very happy. This is the best offering. Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, right? That he wants fruit, flower, leaf, and water. But what he likes best are jivas. That doesn't mean like human sacrifices. But he likes best the love of the living entity. So Radharani's always bringing all the devotees to Krishna, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this mood of Radharani, he's just, as Krishna Das Kaviraj says, without discrimination, without thinking, you know, who's a fit candidate, who's not a fit candidate. He's saying, come, love Krishna. He's not in the mood of being Krishna. He's saying, come, love Krishna. Come, love Krishna. So in this mood of compassion, Radharani is the quintessential female. She's the ideal female. And therefore, she's very soft-hearted. So us who are just playing at being females in this world, sometimes we play at being fish, sometimes we play at being trees, sometimes we play at being males, sometimes we play at being females. So we may not exhibit these qualities very nicely, necessarily. Kasyapa Muni said, women can have faces like lotus flowers, but hearts like razors. But Radharani actually is, she's very, very soft-hearted. She's very, very soft-hearted. She's very, very kind. And this soft-heartedness is really exhibited. I mean, Krishna is soft in general, but he does say, Sarvadamam Prachaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. You have to surrender to me. There was a very famous Professor Kohlberg who was trying to understand why people developed moral judgment. What was the process by which one went from a child to an adult and became moral? So in those days, science was done a little bit differently. And the only people that he did his experiments on were men. He was on college students. And so he decided that there were different levels of moral development, and they were all what we call cognitive. They're all intellectual. And they were based on the principle of justice. So that as a person developed in their concepts of justice, they developed their moral sense. So then, I think her name was, it starts with a G, I can't remember her name exactly. But sometime after that, another scientist challenged his findings and says, well, how do we know that this is universally true? You only did it with men. So she did findings with women, and she found that it was more based on the emotions or affective domain. And she found that it was based, that feelings of morality were based more on mercy. So, of course, different scientists then challenge it back and forth, but those are accepted rather universally by psychologists and psychiatrists. So Krishna is working on this platform of justice. First you surrender to me, then I will protect you. Makes sense, right? Is that logical? Why should I protect you if you haven't surrendered? But Radharani is, oh, I'll take care of you. Isn't that the epitome of the feminine? Not so logical, but very soft-hearted. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu adopts this mood of, yeah, I'll give you shelter. It's okay. You surrender, you've not surrendered. And of course, Lord Nityananda even more so, because the Lord and his expansions are all supporting this mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Nityananda is Balaram supporting the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Dvaitacharya Sadashiva supporting this mood of Chaitanya, this compassionate mood. And Rupa Goswami speaks about different kinds of hearts. Of course, he's talking about the jiva. But he says that the heart should be like butter. And if you think about butter, the melting point is very low. If you even leave butter out in a warm room, it'll become very, very soft. Many of us have steel hearts that even we're chanting and we feel nothing because of our aparada. Aparada literally means aparada, against radha. Radha is devotion. So when our hearts are hard, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, we're just chanting, it just sounds practically. Oh, when will I finish my chanting? You know. Oh, I have to chant so many rounds. That is the symptom of aparada, against radha. And radha is very, very soft, as she melts in compassion. So when I was thinking about the water as being soft, I was also thinking of the soft heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is just melting in love. It becomes just like liquid. And of course, when Krishna is playing his flute, or as Jiva Goswami also explains, when Radharani is singing, so all of the hard substances also melt. The rocks turn into liquid. One place it's described that when Lalita was singing for Radha and Krishna, the jeweled platforms under the trees melted, and after she stopped singing, they reformed into different shapes. But also, when it's the idea is that we who are part and parcel of Krishna, we should also develop this soft-heartedness, this kindness. So I was thinking in that way, we can see that Krishna is there in water. And I was also thinking how we very much like to enjoy in the water. If you want recreation, you go to a place often where there's water, isn't it? Aren't most tourist spots connected with water? Not all, there's some mountain ranges. But most people like to go where there's water. So my son recently moved to Hawaii, or as they say there, Hawaii. And so we were there, and I kept saying, you know, I'm in Hawaii, we've got to go to the beach sometimes. Which wasn't very far, it was a 20-minute walk. So we go to the beach, and there are these turquoise, the water's turquoise and crystal clear. The beaches are mostly black, though, from the lava, because the island's one big rock. You know, black rock. And the waves gradually break down the lava. Sometimes the white beaches are mostly broken down to coral. We're going on these black beaches, this crystal clear turquoise water. And as we're going in the water, there were these sea turtles. They come right up by the shore. Beautiful, beautiful shells. And they're kind of nibbling at your feet. They don't nibble your feet, but they nibble next to you. Oh, what is that? Beautiful sea turtle. So we enjoy the water so much. People are sitting on the shore, and even though, as one poet said, when you look at the water, you can either see very far nor very deep. And there's almost no variety. There's so much more variety on the lens. Everyone is looking at the water. Why? Because it's more subtle. It's actually more attractive. And just like we like to play in the water, so Krishna likes to play in the water. So, of course, Krishna in his original form plays in the water frequently. So where does he play in the water? What water does he play in?
Yamuna.
Yamuna Tira Vanachari. So especially every night, he's a bad boy. Krishna's a bad boy. So we have a very unusual conception of God. Most people, this will relate also to Julian Natra, most people's idea of God is that he's a very spudgy old man. Very conservative, an arch conservative. He never allows anybody to have any fun, let to speak of himself having any fun. And he's sitting on a very big throne. Do you have the heavy-duty born-again evangelicals in this country? Do you have any of them here?
Not so many as in America.
Okay. Well, of course, it depends where you are in America, too. But I've been living in a part of America called the Bible Belt. I lived there for 16 years. And yes. So they have this little, what they call track. It's like a little pamphlet. And they make a lot of these things. So there was one of them they would pass out where God's sitting in this big throne. I mean, it's huge. Huge, huge throne. And there are people at the foot of the throne in comparison. That is a big. I don't think Krishna will miss here. So he's sitting on this big, big throne. He looks like he's wearing a business suit. And there's all these people at the foot of the throne that look like little tiny ants. And he has no face, of course. He has no face. Because they take this verse in the Bible that says no one has seen the face of God and lived. Even though in Exodus it says that Moses saw God face to face, as a friend speaks with another friend, says that. Anyway, they like to take the point that says no one's seen God's face. So he's sitting there faceless, and he's there on the throne, sitting there like this. Looks like one of these marble statues you see outside a library or something. And there's this huge screen. Huge. You know, if the people were about this big, then that's how the screen is about as big as this lovely picture. And on the screen, at the top of the screen, it says, "This is your life." You know, and you get to see your life, and people are quaking. Heaven? Hell? Heaven? Hell, that's all God does all the day. You know, maybe sometimes he sits in the clouds, like you see on some of the Indian movies where they have Indra in the with the cloud making machines, dry eyes. Sometimes he's in the clouds, and there are people going, "Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah." And that's it. That's all he gets to do. So you can see why people are very interested in religion. There's a lot more fun here than, you know, hanging around in a cloud machine just singing hallelujah all the time. So our understanding of God is very different from that. Even though he's the oldest, Adyam Purana Purusham Naviyovanacha. So he's 15. Now, please don't think that he's very old and he just looks 15. Krishna is not somebody in an old age home who just doesn't need plastic surgery. But he's actually 15. Now, he's perfect 15 because I think most of us in this room, except for the children who can't understand this anyway, but I think most of us here are past the 15-year-old mark. Anybody? Yeah? Oh, nobody. Okay, how old are you? 12. Oh, right. So you'll be able to relate a little bit more to what I'm saying. But you guys, can you remember being a 15-year-old boy? Remember being a 15-year-old boy? Just yesterday, right? Of course, you probably weren't very wild. You were probably very sedate and well-behaved. But Krishna's not very sedate and well-behaved. Now, of course, the one thing 15-year-old boys would like is they'd like to know everything. Generally, they think they do know everything. So Krishna does actually know everything. And they'd also like to be all-powerful and invulnerable. So he's also all-powerful and invulnerable. But he's a 15-year-old boy. So every night after his parents put him in bed, he sneaks out of bed. Okay? And so he goes swimming in the Yamuna every night with his girlfriends. And where else does he go swimming? Every day in the middle of the day, he also sneaks away and he goes swimming. Anybody know where he goes swimming in the middle of the day?
Shavakun
Radhika. Yes. Of course, there's many other places. One can see all over Vraj, one finds so many places where Krishna is going swimming. So many different places. He likes water, doesn't he? He's often going swimming in the water. He also takes a bath many times during the day. Nice. Bathe in the middle of the day, and then he's swimming in Radhakund, and then he takes another bath, and evening he comes home, and he swims in the Jamuna. Mm. So he's often getting bathed, and one of the main ways that we worship the deity is by bathing the deity. Especially festivals, we do Abhishek, bathe Krishna, and so many different substances. And this is one of the ways that Krishna, just like this is how we enjoy. I mean, we're part of Krishna. Prabhupada says that you can understand the whole ocean by taking a drop of water. He said you can understand something about the psychology of God by understanding our own psychology. If we could, wouldn't you want to live by the shore in Hawaii and go swimming every day and see the beautiful sea turtles in the crystal clear turquoise water? Wouldn't you want to? You know, instead we go to a health club and we just swim laps with the old people in the chlorinated water. You know, that's our Robert says they were trying to be the Purushas, you know. That's our lame attempt at being a Purusha. Trying to be the enjoyer of the world. But Krishna likes to go swimming in the water, and he plays games in the water with his friends. And then, of course, Krishna in his many different moods, thinking about Matsya Avatar. So there the Lord is this fish, and he becomes... So we're hoping to write a children's book about Matsya Avatar, using big and bigger and bigger and bigger. And he's this huge fish swimming in the water, not just water, but it becomes the water of devastation. He's this beautiful golden fish swimming. So many times we also want to swim like a fish. Of course, when that happens to us, then we take birth as a fish. You ever seen, do you think about what a fish's eyes look like? Can you think about that for a minute? What they look like? Very little consciousness, isn't it? You ever seen the difference between an aquatic mammal like a dolphin and a regular fish with eyes? You see the level of consciousness is quite different. A regular fish is very, very unconscious. So if we want to, again, just like we want to enjoy swimming, we end up having to go to a health club in London. So if we want to enjoy like a fish, we become an unconscious fish. But Krishna is, he's actually enjoying as Matsya, swimming in the water and having this big horn where he's pulling the boat with the sages and all of the herbs and the Vedas. And people pull water skiers on the back of their boats, so Krishna's taking his devotees for a ride on his horn. Mm-hmm. And then a wonderful story is that, and this story we could tell for, probably about 4 or 5 hours, one of my favorite stories, how the demigods and the demons made a truce. Sometimes we can't even get along, you know, devotees and devotees. We have a hard time declaring a truce for a half an hour to some of the devotees. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, when he talks about the offense on the holy name of blaspheming the devotees, he says that to avoid this offense, one must feel joy upon seeing everybody. If there's any devotee that we don't feel joy, we say, well, there's that devotee. This is this offense. Anyway, so the demigods and the demons made a truce. They wanted to get nectar so they would live for a very, very long time. We all want that too, isn't it? Wouldn't you like to live for a long time in a healthy body? Not a long time in an aging body. That's not very attractive. But a long time in a healthy, youthful body. So they're wanting this nectar, and they're churning the ocean of milk. And it's a long story. I mean, they're ringing Mandari Hill, and then it's so heavy it's made out of gold. It falls as they're carrying it, and it breaks their bones. And then Lord Vishnu shows up. Lord Vishnu isn't older, much older than 1620 either. You know, young boys want to be heroes. You guys remember to be heroes? Maybe still want to be. So he likes to show up, you know. Shows up at the last minute, saves the day. Here I am, you know. This is this young, delicate, very soft young boy. But still, he just lifts up this huge mountain that all the demigods and demons couldn't even carry. He just picks it up, puts it on the back of Garuda, flies with it to the ocean of milk. Then they put it in the ocean of milk, and they wind Vasuki around the ocean. Of course, as soon as Vasuki comes, Lord Vishnu tells Garuda, you know, better leave him because you're going to make him in anxiety. Krishna's very soft in that sense also, that he's very sensitive and caring for the needs of the devotees. He never wants anyone to feel uncomfortable. Just thinking, I don't want Vasuki to feel uncomfortable with Garuda, even though, of course, Garuda's not going to eat Vasuki in Krishna's presence. So then they tie Vasuki around, and immediately Lord Vishnu goes to the head of Vasuki because he's thinking, well, I'm the hero. I should take the most dangerous part of the snake. And the demigods just follow. And then the demons were a little upset. They had the tail and they were very morose. And they said, you know, we've also taken birth in very good families. Why don't we have the tail? And they were thinking the head was more auspicious. So Prabhupada explains the mentality of the demons, which when I was reading it, I was thinking about myself. He said that the demons always are perverse. The demigods, they follow. Whatever Krishna does, they're willing to follow. But the demons always want to do the opposite. It's like we were preaching at Woodstock, and the young people there are saying, why can't we have illicit sex? Why can't we take intoxication? Well, that's the mentality of the demon. Whatever you tell them, they want to do the opposite. And Prabhupada was saying, if they saw the demigods drink poison, they'd say, we want to drink poison too. Why only the demigods can drink poison? This is the demoniac mentality. So they see the demigods there, and we want to hold the head, you know. So Lord Vishnu says, fine, you want to hold the head. Lord Vishnu goes to the tail, the demigods follow Lord Vishnu to the tail, the demons take the head, which means they get covered with smoke and fire, and they get really tired and literally burnt, and it wasn't very convenient for them. So they're churning and churning and churning and churning and churning. And as they're churning, though, there was no resting place for the mountain, so it fell into the ocean of milk. And there kept being setbacks. Do you ever feel like that? You know, you have some mission in Krishna's service that maybe is given to you even by your guru. It was Lord Vishnu who told the demigods and demons to do this. And yet, it just doesn't work out. You know? First, they drop the mountain on them, and they break their bones, and then Krishna saves them, and then it falls into the ocean of milk. And then the Lord had a little itch. You ever itch on your back? You just can't get. So he had an itch on his back, and therefore he took the form of a turtle. And he went, of course, this isn't exactly water, so you have to forgive me that I'm stretching a little bit because it was milk. It was very similar to the idea of going swimming. So the Lord went under the mountain, and he held the mountain on his back. And it's described in the Bhagavatam that when you see Lord Vishnu, you notice that his ornaments are very shiny. And the reason that they're shiny, it's explained in Bhagavatam, is that they were polished by this churning of the Mandara mountain. And so this is, and the Lord is very beautiful. He's multicolored, and even in this form as Korma, although he's a turtle, he's also very, very soft. And he's enjoying this churning that the demigods were doing, and that story, of course, goes on. And then we find that the Lord also, when he creates this world, as Prabhupada was talking about here in the purports, the Lord creates this world as Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu is doing what? He's
lying in the water.
And he's lying, he expands as Seshanab, the serpent bed, and was also himself. And the serpent bed is lying in the water. Do you ever go in the water like on one of those inflatable rafts or something, you know? And you just lie in the water. You know, maybe even fall asleep. The other one says yoga nidra. So the Lord's lying on the Sesha bed in yoga nidra. Nidra means sleep. But he's not in ignorance sleep. He's in a yogic trance. And he's lying on this causal ocean, and the causal ocean is alive. Jesus said that to the Samaritan woman at the well. He says, why are you taking this ordinary water? I can give you living water, which you'll never have to thirst again. Actually, Prabhupada one time told the devotees, he said, you don't know what is water. Real water is living water. So this causal ocean is alive. And the Lord is lying on Anantasesha, floating in the water, and sleeping in a yogic trance. And he's dreaming. What is he dreaming?
Generating different universes.
Yes, and he's dreaming the material world. We are in the dream of the Lord. And as he's sleeping, he exhales and inhales, and exhales and inhales. And as he exhales, the universe, so he's just relaxing on this water. Okay? And then in each universe, he expands himself. He goes as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and there he's perspiring. So, of course, when we perspire, it's not very nice. But when the Lord perspires, it's explained that the Lord's perspiration is just like pearls. And he becomes very, very beautiful when he's decorated with this perspiration. And this perspiration creates a whole ocean at the bottom of the universe. And then again, he lies in that water. And there he's being massaged by Lakshmi. So who wouldn't like this, right? So you go to this beautiful living water, and you're just relaxing, and your consort is massaging your feet. So, this is the Lord. And from there he creates the universe. So he's always playing in the water. And then in this universal water that Garbhadakshaya Vishnu was lying on, so one time near the beginning of the creation, there was a problem. The demons were drilling in the earth for oil, which they do now also. And as they were drilling for oil, oil is the lifeblood of Bhumi, and as they were drilling for oil, they offset the balance, just like you can imagine, you know, if you were losing a lot of blood, you become dizzy. Sometimes those of us who have low blood pressure, if we stand up too fast, we get dizzy. Blood going through your brain. So Bhumi became dizzy and out of her orbit, and she fell into the water. And the demigods, what are we going to do? The earth planet is a very important planet. He said, this earth has fallen into the water. So then the Lord, he's thinking, all right, if I want to go into the water, what would be the proper mood for finding something at the bottom of an unlimited ocean of water? So the proper mood would be that of a boar. So then he accepts the form of a boar. He assumes the form of a boar. In that form of a boar, he's so beautiful. Actually, each part of his form is a different form of the Vedas. And it says that he looked at his devotees with a glance laden with love. And he went into the water, he penetrated the water with his hard, glittering hooves, and he searched out the water, and although it's unlimited, he found its limits. And he rescued the earth, and the earth is Lord Varaha's wife. Yes, the earth is his wife. And Bhumi Devi is one of the wives of the Lord. And it said, as he was carrying her on his tusks, because each of Krishna's senses can perform the actions of any other senses. So as he was carrying on his tusks, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, he impregnated her, and that's a whole other story. That's son fell into bad association later on. So, but he was very gently, very lovingly, there was a very loving exchange between the Lord and his wife, carrying her up through this living water at the bottom of the ocean, balancing her very gently on his tusks and coming up through the water. And as he came up, right, all young men also, they want to rescue a lady, right? Isn't it? And all ladies want to be rescued by men. If we're in danger, we want some hero to come and save us, you know? The men, they want, I'm going to save the lady. So that's, Krishna has that mentality. So she's being carried on the tusks of the Lord, and the Lord brings her up to the surface, and then the demon Hiranyaksha appears, and he starts insulting the Lord, but the Lord thinks, I have to take care of my lady first before I can fight with this demon. So he sets her very carefully, very gently on the water. He gives to her his own potency to float, and he makes sure that she is safe before he attends the demon, who he then fights in the water. So he has this fight in the water. And then, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has his pastimes in the water, especially in the Ganga. So I'm sure that there are many other instances of Krishna's pastimes that are connected with water. So I was thinking about this, that in our, as we go through our lives, everything that we come, people often ask, how can I remember Krishna all the time? But everything we are contacting, I mean, also Krishna's saying the air, we're always breathing the air, that's also one of Krishna's energies, and maybe one of you can meditate on how we can understand Krishna through air, or through earth. And this way, one can easily become Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada was often asked, have you seen God? And he said, yes, I'm seeing him all the time in the sunshine. Can't you see him? Haven't you drunk water? We are looking for something mystical. If you want something mystical, first see Krishna in the simple. Don't wait for the mystical and ignore the simple. See Krishna in what you have around you, and then Krishna will reveal himself in his original form. Otherwise, if we're not trying to be Krishna conscious with what we have, then why should Krishna show us more? Does that make sense? I give you something, I give you a gift, and if you don't even use that, then why should I give you more? So Krishna is present before us, even in gross matter, like earth, water, fire, air, ether. Earth, water, fire means solid liquids, gases, and the transforming element. So we can meditate on, so we were talking about several things with water, and how water reminded us of Krishna's qualities, how the taste of water gives us some idea of Krishna's sweetness and how refreshing he is and how satisfying he is, how the liquidity of water reminded us of his softness and his compassion. Then we thought about how Krishna likes to enjoy in water. Of course, that is transcendental living water. And we could see even the activities that go on in this world could remind us of Krishna's enjoyment. Actually, all Krishna does is enjoy. He doesn't have any work to do. Krishna explains this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's very interesting because that's in a response to Arjuna saying that if I have this war, then there'll be so many widows and then there'll be unwanted children. And Krishna says, no, if you don't fight, you'll be giving up your duty, and then there'll be unwanted children because people will stop being dutiful, which is what's happened in modern society. People don't care anymore about duty. Why should I get married? I'll just live with this person. Never mind, there's children, not children. I produce three children, and I'll leave them, and I'll be with someone else and produce them. People give up on their duty, and there's so many unwanted children. So Krishna says, if I didn't do my duty, everyone else would also stop doing their duty. But there Krishna explains, he says, I don't have any work to do. Why should God have any work to do? When he was arguing with Rukmini, his wife Rukmini, was saying that people say that you don't own anything. Actually, Krishna told her, he said, yes, you're right, I don't own anything. And Rukmini answered him and she says, you don't have to own everything because you are everything. You don't require to possess something, it's what you already are. So Krishna already is everything. And he's described as Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. And even if you say that he can have a desire, he's also Aptikama. He can satisfy his own desires. It's like if I'm hungry, I cannot satisfy that hunger from my own body. You know, eat my own finger or something. I have to bring something from outside to satisfy myself. Of course, if one became very advanced in yoga, there are residents of the higher planets who are also Aptikama. They can satisfy their own desires without anything external. But Krishna is, first of all, he's fully self-satisfied. He doesn't have any desire to fulfill. And second of all, if he has some desire to fulfill, he can satisfy it himself. He doesn't need anything externally. So therefore, he doesn't have to do anything. I mean, why do we have to do things? I need shelter, I need food. I mean, we can make a whole list of needs. We have physiological needs, we have psychological needs, and they're actual needs. You know, if we don't get them met in some form, we'll go mad or we'll become ill or something like that. I have social needs. So Krishna says, therefore I have to work. I have to do activities. My activities are all strategies to meet my needs, which of course I don't do very well in this world. I remain unmet. But Krishna has no needs. So if he has no needs, why does he have to do anything? Why does he have to dive in the water like a big fish? Why does he have to have Mandara Mountain scratching his back? Why does he have to go sneak out in the middle of the night to dance with his girlfriends and bathe in the Yamuna? He doesn't have to. So the word for Krishna's activities is? What is the word? Lila. Lila means sport. So do we also do some things we don't have to do? I hope so. We also do some things just for fun. In fact, some psychologists have theorized that we have a need for fun. That that's actually a need. But whether or not we want to say that, we all do some things just for fun. We don't have to do them. I didn't have to go to the beaches in Hawaii with my friend. So Krishna, he's just doing that all the time. We can do that sometimes. We have to work all the time. Mostly we're doing things that we have to do. And every once in a while we get to do something that we like to do for fun. And then we have to go through so much trouble to have that fun. So to go to the beach, so of course my son and his wife, they have 4 sons and 2 daughters. So it's a little bit of a, it takes some time to get everybody ready to go. Everybody has to get their swimsuits and their towels, and then the lava rocks under the water. So you have to get your water shoes. You don't have any idea what water shoes are here, do you? But anyway, they're shoes that you wear in the water so the bottom of your feet don't get cut. I showed it to someone here and she says, those look like trainers. I said, no, they're water shoes. So you have to get your water shoes and your swimming costume, you call that here? Sometimes I think we speak the same language, but I'm not always sure. So you get your water shoes and your swimming costume and your towels and your change of clothes and all this, and you get that in a bag, and you have to get everybody in the van, and then you have to drive to the beach, and you get to the beach and you have to unpack everybody, and you go in the water and you get sand and everything, and then you have to take a shower, and you've got to change all your clothes, and then you've got to pack everything up, and then you've got to drive back home, and then you have all this wet stuff and sandy stuff and shake out all the sand and wash all the clothes. And then you have to pack prasadam too, to eat there, which means you had to make some bread and, you know, and then you make sandwiches and all these things. So you have to do all this work, you know, 5 or 6 hours worth of work to go swimming for an hour. And you put on sunblock and maybe get sunburned, and I don't know, there's so many people with extra melanin have to worry about that. People like me have to worry. So all this trouble for a little bit of fun. And of course then you're there, it may not be unadulterated fun. Like my daughter was with a tour group going around South India, and in Jagannath Puri she stepped on a stingray barb. And she was convulsing for 4 hours, and she wasn't able to walk for the rest of the tour. They had to carry her like on the, you know, I know it's an offense to go in the temple on a palanquin, but that was the only way she could go in. They had to carry her to all the, you know, all these temples in South India with all the state. Radhanath Maharaj tells the story how they were doing this Harinam in Italy when it was like 44 degrees, and at the end of the day they came to the Mediterranean. They were so hot, and he was like, oh, let's go in, you know, water. And everybody's racing the water, and as soon as they go in the water, they started screaming because there were jellyfish in the water. So, you know, even after all our hard work for our fun, when you get the fun, it may not even be fun. I went on this vacation, and, you know, I just got sick, and my passport got stolen, and it wasn't even. Can you, everyone move up these 2 feet? Thank you. So, but Krishna only has fun. He never has to work. Even when he's creating the material world, he's not doing any work. He's only having fun. So this is Krishna's Leela. And we see this exemplified in this Julian Yatra. So what is Krishna doing? He's swinging on a swing. You know, what is Krishna Jewel Day? So just like people regularly, the kind of questions we generally ask when we meet somebody. What kind of questions do you ask somebody when you meet someone for the first time? What's your name?
What do you do?
What do you do? Where do you live? These are the typical questions. So we ask people, what do you do? So suppose you ask somebody, so what do you do? And they say, I swim and go swinging every day. Right? You think that was rather odd. But that's what Krishna does. So at this time, how many of you here have been to India? Oh, good. How many of you have been to India when it was hot? So right now is not the hottest part of the year, but it's still pretty hot. And now it's hot and humid, and we very rarely have weather like this in London. So those of you who haven't been to a place where it was very hot and humid, you're really going to have to use your imagination for this one. But I'd like this right now. Of course, it's a little difficult to do it right now, because right now it's 12 midnight in India, so I don't think the swimming begins right now in the temples. But maybe Krishna's actually swimming, as he's swinging. I know he swings at midday. I'm not sure if he swings in his night pastimes. But if we could go now to Vrindavan, mentally. One can go mentally faster than the speed of the wind. So if we could right now go to Vrindavan. And it's very, very hot and it's very, very humid. And even though the temperature is a little less than it was in the very hot season, the humidity makes it feel very, very, very hot. And you know, when it's very, very, very hot, what we want is a breeze. We really want a nice, cool breeze. And what you can do if there's not already a nice, cool breeze is you can make your own breeze. One way you can make your own breeze is by sitting on a swing. So, where I was living for many years in America, in the southern part of the country, now, of course, there's air conditioning everywhere, which you don't have much in this country because you don't need it. But there before that, on every gentleman's house on the front, there was a swing. And so Krishna especially, he swings every day because the six seasons are always manifest in Vrindavan. So every day he goes to the monsoon forest. But if we go there now in Vrindavan, it's really, really hot. And therefore Krishna likes to swing on a swing. And very rich southern gentleman, when he's swinging on the swing with his wife, how else does he get a breeze? Besides the swing, he's also getting a breeze because people are fanning him. Yes. So the gopis are around Radha and Krishna as they're swinging on the swing, fanning them. And of course there's also very nice droplets of water, and there's flowers being offered. And Krishna's sitting on a very nice cushion. Radha and Krishna sitting on a very nice cushion. It's made out of the softest material, and it's filled with flowers without scents. So we find very nice flowers like roses, or very fragrant gardenias, the soft flowers, and the residents have picked off, even now if you go there, there's so many devotees taking the flowers, and so that we can go mentally to Vrindavan and let us pick some flowers, and we'll take off the stems, okay? Can we do this in our mind? We'll put this in a nice soft cloth, we'll fold the cloth, and we'll make a nice cushion. And then we have a swing for Krishna. And of course, Krishna is going to swing on a golden swing or a silver swing or a diamond swing. Prabhupada says, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne for Krishna in your heart. So today we can make a diamond swing for Krishna in our heart. But of course, the diamonds are very soft and they smell nice too. And on top of that, we have a nice soft cushion filled with flowers. And because it's so hot, we're inviting Radha Krishna to sit on the swing. And we're swinging them. And as we're swinging them, we're also fanning them, or other friends are fanning them, and they're throwing flowers. And as we're doing this, of course, and we're doing what the residents of the spiritual sky are always doing, we're singing the glories of Radha and Krishna. And we're singing so many songs glorifying Radha and Krishna. Now, sometimes Radha and Krishna sit on a swing like this, next to each other. Sometimes they sit on a swing facing each other. And sometimes Krishna makes the swing go very fast, which scares Radharani, and then she comes to him for shelter. He does this with us too, that he puts us in dangerous situations so that we have to come to him to save us from the dangerous situations that he put us in. So this is his fun, because Krishna likes to play the hero, and the devotees have fun giving Krishna fun, letting him play the hero. And so sometimes also when Krishna's swinging, sometimes there are a multitude of swings around the main swing. And in each swing, of course, Narottama Das Thakur explains this in talking about a boat in Vrindavan on the Jamuna River. Taramade imabita astadale, kashita astadale, pradana mayaka. In the middle, there's a golden throne surrounded by the eight petals on which sit the eight gopis. But actually, it's surrounded by innumerable petals. And Krishna is, each gopi on each swing is thinking, oh, Krishna's only swinging with me. It's like here in this room, I can look at you, but if I'm looking at you, I can't look at you. If I'm looking at you, I can't look at you. So I used to be in the public speaking and debate club when I was in secondary school. Our coach taught us that we should look at each person. Right? If you're really nervous, then you just look at the wall behind the people, but I don't think that quite makes it. Do you think that makes it? Not quite the same thing, is it? But I can't look at all of you at once. And even if I could, I don't really know all of you. In fact, most of you, I don't even know your names. And I certainly don't know what's going on in your heart. Our connection with him from this world is very superficial. But Krishna, he can look at each of his associates, and he knows everyone's heart intimately. Right? When Krishna's eating in the morning, Yasoda's bringing him the food that Radharani's cooked, and then she goes to the kitchen to get some more. He very quickly takes off his plate what everybody's favorite is, and he quickly puts on each of his associates their favorite preparations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would do this also. You can see his hands, and when he put on people's plates, he would put no less than what 10 people could eat. And he would give everyone their favorites, which means we're individuals. That we do have favorites. And we do have favorites, even in our original spiritual form. So Krishna's relating with each gopi, and each gopi is thinking, you know, we have this desire to be special. Don't we want to be special? We don't want to be special. We all want, you know, our plaque up in the temple that I gave the donation for something. You know, we want to be noticed, which perverts in this world as a desire for fame, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is the first weakness of heart that brings us to this world. I want to be special. I want to be noticed. I want people to pay attention to me. I want to be the center. That desire to be noticed is not a bad desire at all. But we should want to be noticed by Krishna. And Krishna notices each of the devotees in such a way that they think they're the only one in the world. Each of Krishna's 16,108 wives, they thought, Krishna never goes to see the other wives. They must be lonely. He's only here with me. So sometimes when Krishna's on the swing, each gopi is thinking, Krishna's only swinging with me. He's not with anybody else. So this is the kind of person that we can have. Janaka Janani Daita Tanai Prabhu Guru Patitunu Saram. As our everything, we are trying to form these intimate relationships with our mother, father, our husband, wife, our children in this world, our employers. But even if they do notice us, where is the heart-to-heart connection? Don't you ever feel this even with people that you love or you don't really understand them? Why can't you know what I want without my telling you? Women especially do that. If you really loved me, I wouldn't have to ask. You would just know what I want. So, ladies, don't do that. But just tell your man what you want. But you don't have to tell Krishna. He just knows. So this deity worship, Prabhupada says worshiping the deity is the same thing as serving Krishna in the spiritual world. There is one difference. What is that difference? Our consciousness. So if I'm thinking, you know, here's just some piece of brass, and this is just some ritualistic ceremony, and I have to do this because I'm just trying to be a good person, and this is my social gathering, and I have to show this is my ritual. Or I have to do this because that way I get to hang around, they'll feed me. Or if I do this ritual, then maybe I'll get to go back to Godhead as some kind of mechanical thing. I know it's actually Krishna. Just like Krishna's water, Krishna's earth, Krishna's metal, Krishna's everything, Krishna's matter. It's actually Krishna and Radharani are actually there. And they're enjoying their swing pastimes here. And we get to participate here. And what happens when we participate with Krishna? We're actually part of Krishna's leelas. All these different, we're one of Krishna's associates. We're just sleeping. We're thinking, you know, I'm an American, so I say water. He told someone I was going to talk about water today. He said, oh, you're going to talk about water, huh? So I'm thinking I'm an American, or those of you thinking I'm very British, how much more cultured than this American lady up there? Or you're thinking I'm Indian, I'm even more cultured than British. And I'm British Indian, so I'm more cultured than anybody. So we're thinking like that, you know, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm British, I'm Indian, I'm old, I'm young, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm smart, I'm stupid, whatever. We're thinking these things, but really, we're one of the Lord's eternal associates. And if we want to revive that, you know, maybe some of us are waiting for just some mercy to fall on our heads. That will happen, of course. But if we want to attract that mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can see he's just giving this soft-hearted mercy with this melting heart. If we want to attract that mercy, if we want to retain that mercy, Bhakti Sri Maharaj was saying how where that mercy is pouring in our heart all the time, but we have all these holes in it, all of our aparadas. If we want to retain that mercy, then one thing we need to do is just be conscious. What am I doing? I'm actually swinging Radha and Krishna. If I'm swinging Radha and Krishna, where Radha and Krishna are, I must be in Vrindavan. That Dvaitacharya told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when Lord Nityananda tricked him and he was in the Ganga instead of the Jamuna. He said, you told me I was in Vrindavan. And Dvaitacharya said, wherever you are, that's Vrindavan. He said, anyway, the Jamuna flows up the side of the Ganga. But wherever the Lord is, that is Vrindavan. So then we're in Vrindavan. And we're engaging in our service of swinging Radha and Krishna. If we do that with full consciousness, and if we can't do that, at least begging. Please, Krishna, I want to do this with some love. You can say, I don't have any love. But Prabhupada says, all of us already have love. All of us already have attachment. Just like Krishna's arranging my life, that my number of possessions is getting smaller and smaller. So my house now weighs 20 kgs, and it's about this big. So I have my number of things I can get attached to are very small, but I find I'm still very attached to them. I can tell you at any time of the day, where is my computer? Where is my wallet? I'm always worrying, you know, will the airlines keep my luggage safe? We all have some attachment. We have attachment to something. Our home, our suitcase, our clothes, our husband, our wife, our children, our job, something. We already have attachment. We already have affection for something. Do you all have affection for some other living being? No. Or you had, at least maybe when you were young, at least for your mother? Nowadays you can't tell so many dysfunctional families. We already know what it's like to have affection, and why? Where is this affection coming from? Because they're part of Krishna. That's explained by Shukadeva Goswami in the pastime of Lord Brahma stealing the cows. We have affection for other living beings because they're part of Krishna. Really, that affection is for Krishna. So when we're swinging Krishna, please think about that feeling of attachment that you have, already have, for something. That feeling of affection you already have for someone. And bring that to Krishna. Bring that to Krishna. And as we do that, Krishna will reciprocate and he'll manifest. Yes, here I am. Here you are in Vrindavan. So I think I should end there. I came late and I've gone over, and then you'll never invite me again if I don't stop talking. Of course, even if you do invite me again, it'll take me another year to get here. So you don't have to worry too much. Any questions at all? Maybe take just a couple minutes if anyone has any questions or comments. Yes, please.
Mataji, you explained how the connection we have with other people may be superficial, and the connection we have with Krishna is not superficial. Could you just expand a little bit on this, please?
You can't have a deep relationship with other people until you've really established a relationship with Krishna. So in 1976, when I saw Prabhupada in New York, so I was, we were in his darshan room, and I was sitting probably right with this lovely lady is sitting in relation to Prabhupada. And I had my oldest son on my lap. He was about a year and a half, just like you have your little child, just exactly like that. And Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving this child without any expectation of return, he said, in the same way you should love Krishna. And my father said, will loving her child help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no. He said, but loving Krishna will help her to love her child. So once we start establishing our relationship with Krishna, then we can have deep and meaningful and heart relationships with other living entities. Otherwise, the problem is our relationship with others is based on, I'm sorry to say, exploitation. If Thomas Merton, a very famous Christian theologian, said that each of us has a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. And God is unlimited, which means that this hole in our heart is unlimited. So that means that without realizing my connection with Krishna, I'm walking around in need. Sometimes we say people are emotionally needy. Well, some people demonstrate it more, but all conditioned souls are in a platform of neediness, of emptiness. We have this unlimited chasm. And what we're doing with our relationships with others is we're trying to use something from that person to meet our needs. We're seeing them in one sense like food. Now, we're willing to give them something. If we're civilized, we learn that I can't ask somebody to meet my needs without giving them something in return. But we try to calculate it so that it's at best equal, and if we can get more than we give, we're even happier. You know? We don't like being in a relationship for a long period of time where we're giving more than we're getting. We start to feel exploited, isn't it? Even in our intimate relationships. So then I'm not really connecting with that person as a person. I'm seeing that person more or less as food. I'm seeing that person is going to do something to meet my needs. Try talking to people who are thinking or planning about getting married. And you'll find that their language is very exploitive. I don't think I've ever heard people thinking about getting married talking about what they can offer the other person. They're almost always talking about what can the other person do for me. Well, I want to find a husband who'll do this, who'll do this, who'll do this. Not, I want to find a husband who I'm really inspired to serve. I don't think I've ever heard. So we're thinking like that. You know, people want a child so they can also, you know, they want someone they can love. That's our unfortunate position. And what will happen, and this is a warning, but what will happen as you go on chanting Hare Krishna is that you'll see your exploitive nature more and more and more. You'll start to chaita dharpana marjanam, you'll see the mirror, dharpana. And at first what you'll see in the mirror is the dirt. Guru Jambu said it's like turning on a light in a very dirty room. And you'll see that your relationships here are exploited. It's not a pleasant thing to see. And this is true even with other devotees. You see this all the time with disciples and the guru. All the time. They're thinking they're going to serve, but their motive is to take. They're looking for... Have you ever heard of, like, in India, these people who give Shaktipat initiations? You ever heard of that? They just, like, touch your forehead and you get some jolts and then... I actually saw this in Trinidad. It's a long story. But we're thinking like that. You know, I'll get with this great soul and by their blessings, they'll just give me blessings. They'll just look at me. I'll eat their remnants and I'll be a devotee. What am I thinking? I'm thinking I want to take from them. How can I use this person? So I may not be going to this person for blessings, for health or for money, or which is... Frequently people do that with the same person. So I'm going to them, give me blessings so I can, you know, I don't have to work at conquering my inheritance. I'll just instantly get Krishna coming. It's exploit. So how can you have a deep heartfelt relationship with someone you're trying to exploit? You can't. It's impossible. You can't even begin to have real empathy. But let's say then instead of having an empty heart, let's say that your heart's filled with Krishna, who's unlimited. Then your heart is overflowing with love. Now, if your heart is overflowing with love, instead of taking from people, what will you be doing? You'll be giving. And because Krishna's unlimited, you don't have to worry about giving. When I'm empty, I can't give you very much. I soon become depleted. But if I've got an unlimited fountain of love, then I can give you unlimitedly and I'm not depleted. I have to make sure I'm always connected to that. And then I don't need anything from you, do I? Nothing. You can't hurt me, so I don't need any fear. Can you follow? So first I have to have that loving relationship with Krishna. Then I can truly love him. All right, so why don't we practice that? Enough with the theory. All right, so why don't we practice swinging Radha and Krishna and work on some feeling of attachment and affection. Have it be a meditation. We say this is yoga, so we should do that. Yoga means we're in meditation. We should come to the point of samadhi. Actual, where we're deeply meditating on what we're doing. And then we will start to feel this connection. Is that all right? So thank you for tolerating this late start, long class. You're a very attentive audience. So I'm not sure if you're attentive because you're actually attentive or you're just very, very polite. But I thank you very much for having me here, and I hope that I will be able to come again sometimes. It's a very, very enlivened and enthusiastic audience. So it's very nice to have you here. Thank you very much.